Give me a point and I will begin.
Give me a point to doing this show. There is no point.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sneaky Dragon. I'm Ian Boothby.
And I'm David Dedrick.
And this is episode 186. So if this was our comic book, this would be the episode where I give you my controversial views on feminism.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's 186.
Right. 186.
That was the one where a Canadian cartoonist decided, I'm going to put something in my book, and then the world changed.
It did kind of feel that way.
Yeah.
Because before that time, you're like, we're all on the same team together. Let's all work. Let's all put our shoulders to the wheel and let's, what?
Yeah, let me just read this. Settle. I don't know if I'm on the same page. And so on and so forth. Anyway, everybody.
I was willing to think that it was his character's opinion at the time. Because he'd already done a feminist reading of The Moon Landing.
By the way, we're talking about Dave Sim and the book Cerebus.
Cerebus. And in the earlier edition, the earlier part, when Cerebus ascends to the moon and meets the judge, it was basically a feminist version of the, of an interpretation of the moon landing.
Right.
As a sort of a rape of the moon, as a male rape of the moon, which was, you know, sort of an interesting take on it.
Right. And so I like when, that storyline so much, I bought a page of original art from that storyline.
Yeah. And so when he did the turnaround and did one that looked at something from a different point of view, you know, then I thought, well, it's just a character who's speaking. It's not Dave Sim.
This is a little bit of balance here.
Yeah. He's just kind of coming at both sides of this, you know.
And then time went on.
And then time went on. And it became this weird entrenched craziness that just kind of kept going.
And I gave away that page of art. The end.
It's too bad.
Now we've discussed Cerebus on other shows. What we haven't discussed is Jelly Babies. Now I just want to get this out of the way.
You want to get it out of the way,
Jelly Babies. I want to get it out of the way because I've put a picture of this up online. People people are excited.
Let me grab the package.
Let me explain a little bit of the backstory on Jelly
Babies. Explain it,
Dave. There's a fire somewhere here. I hear a fire. Are those your brittle bones?
That's right.
Okay. Here's the thing.
While you're explaining, I'll open them up. Go ahead, explain.
Yeah, and then
tell us what.
Looking forward to hearing people eating on mic. By the way, I remember with a podcast I used to listen to, they would eat on mic, and they would say, "I don't know why people complain about this. It's like people used to eat on the radio all the time." No, they didn't.
Yeah.
But it was like, it was always nice. It was like, but listening to the radio from a distance is different than in your ear. Terrible. Disgusting. Yeah. You don't want that.
Yeah.
So I apologize for the sounds you're going to hear. But anyway, the Jelly Babies connection here is David is a classic Doctor Who fan. Before, I know everyone loves...
A classic Doctor Who. You're saying like I'm a classic example of a Doctor
you're
Who
wearing,
fan?
You're wearing... Listen, it could not be hotter out and you're wearing a long scarf.
I am wearing the 20-foot scarf.
That's right. Yeah. You actually did have a 20-foot scarf.
I did. Yes, I did.
I had one later, but not the official colors.
Yeah.
Yours was made by a friend, Gladys.
Yes, that's right.
And mine by my friend Gladys.
Yeah.
Unrelated.
That's strange.
I assume.
You would think that name would be kind of rare at our generation.
And by the way, on a complete side note, there could not be more marijuana smoke coming in right now.
Yeah. I feel like I'm in a hot box. Yeah. Literally. It's hot in here and I'm boxing.
Okay. So, anywho. But I know everyone now loves Doctor Who. You go anywhere in England, Doctor Who everywhere.
Yeah.
But...
If you went anywhere in England, people loved Doctor Who.
Right.
Like it would be turned on in the pub so people could watch Doctor Who.
Fair enough. But in North America, not really.
You didn't know about it.
You'd have to, like, it was shown here because I believe a guy.
We talked about that before, but
commercial airtime.
That's right. He went to a local, actually it was an American station, but kind of a local station that, you know, and he just went to them and said, listen, I want to buy, you know, 2 hours on a Saturday at midnight. And I will, you know, I'm going to pay for it. And he did. He paid for it himself by selling ad time during the shows. And he ran the complete episode, you know, the complete four part. Usually, because at that time, unlike now, you get 1 hour long episode and that kind of tells you the story and wraps it up. At that time, it was serialized. So you got, usually it was four parts. So you get 4 half-hour parts, each one ending in a cliffhanger until you get to the end of it. And then it would start another one, and they would go with four parts. Usually, sometimes it'd be maybe 6 parts. It just depended on the storyline. But mostly,
and how
they
long the costume would last.
That's right.
Some costumes would not last more than 4 episodes.
That's true. Or the set would start to topple, so they have to be. We have to get this done really fast.
And then everyone on the show is talking very quickly.
Then they start wiggling in the camera and just improvise earthquake in that sequence of the show. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a, you know, it was a cheaply made show, but it was very imaginative because...
Sorry to interrupt, but I'm now picturing, like, in Star Trek, every time the ship got hit and they did that swaying back and forth thing, everyone goes, whoa, just picture a drunk cameraman and they're all, we can't let him get fired. Let's all just pretend that the ship's doing that. And that's every time. All right, but please continue.
So, yeah, I mean, it was a cheaply done show. I mean, if you object to cheapness and you're not, you're going to have trouble. I mean, I was watching, one was on Netflix, and it's kind of a classic one that everyone loves, where... it's from the Sarah Jane Smith era with the Tom Baker doctor. And they go to the spaceship and insects have...
Sorry, I've got to say, sirens going by. Yep. So as per tradition on our show, please take a drink if you have a drink.
I'll take a drink of these jelly babies here.
Okay, no, don't. It's still sealed up. Okay, please continue.
And so then, so they go into the spaceship and insects have got in and have, you know, like used the crew as hosts. And, you know, so it's kind of an interesting, but when they start to change, they have like these, their hands, what they did was they took bubble wrap and just dyed it green. And so it's just wrapped around their hand. So it kind of looks like a fin, like a tentacly fin.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's obviously bubble wrap but when you watched it when you were younger, your TVs weren't high def. Your TVs were at best no def. And so it looked okay. Yeah. But when you watch it now on a television that has some.
Now they're most def.
Yeah. Now we have most def TVs. And it's hard to understand what they're saying a lot of the time. But, you know, you can really tell, like, the bare budget special effects that you're seeing. But I love that.
I still wish, like, they would, at one point, please take another drink.
Please take another drink.
I still wish they would do a Doctor Who in the old style sometime. Mm-hmm. Like, with the old sets.
Yeah.
And just, like, you know, have the modern Doctor, but go back and, have to revisit something in the past and just do that.
That'd be fun. Well, what would be fun, actually, was you could kind of do, like, sort of like what they did on Supernatural with the French Mistake, where the characters get transported into another dimension where, instead of being hunters, hunting demons and other supernatural creatures, they are actors pretending to be hunters hunting supernatural creatures and stuff like that. So they just find themselves in this world where they're actually actors who are expected to perform and they're not actors. So they don't know what they're doing. And this world is baffling to them because there's no magic in it.
They recently did that on Red Dwarf. So that would probably be tricky for them to do now as well. That was a Red Dwarf thing about two seasons ago they came to, I think it was called Back to Reality. I think so.
Okay.
Or something like that. But yeah, they were in the real world. And then, the lead guy, I forget who his name, but the person who plays Lister, went.
There was Rimmer and Lister.
Yeah. That's right. And Lister, the actor who plays that, and I'm really sorry, I've seen his name infinite times. Crick Charles? Does that sound correct? He's also on Coronation Street right now. So his character met the actor on Coronation Street in, you know.
Yeah.
So that was kind of neat. Enjoyable.
Sure.
Dave.
Yeah, back but in- you could have the Doctor go back into this, you know, into this time period where he's seeing, like, he's visiting the set Doctor Who from the 70s. And he's like, this is amazing. They're doing, like, my life.
Yeah.
But he's never...
As best as they can.
As best they can, but he's never seen it before. And so he's, you know, he's trying to not be too bossy about the things are getting right or wrong.
It would be really interesting if you could do a thing where... Hi, we're all just doing our fan fiction now. if you could have a thing where you go back and forth, right? Yeah. So you see how they would do it in the 70s.
Yeah.
But then you cut back to, like, a memory or something of how it really happened. And so it's now the slick... effects, but you keep cutting back to, and then you fill in the whole story with both those things.
Yeah.
And then you get to the point where it's like the big climactic amazing, and then you go to the cheesy special effects, and then you come back to the other thing. Yeah, that'd be fun.
It would be a fun show.
And the point...
Let's get writing that.
And what we're, why we're bringing this up is David, back when it wasn't necessarily cool to like Doctor Who. And one of the things that the Tom Baker doctor did when he met people was he would offer them a jelly baby.
Yes, he carried a little paper bag of jelly babies.
Now, I assumed that David...
It never looked that sanitary.
David has been to England a couple of times. Quite a few times, let's say. Sometimes he has tax problems. He leaves for England for a while.
That's true.
Until the heat
it's
dies
It's well-known
down.
Tax haven.
That's right.
Yeah,
because the tax people call up and go, "Can I speak to David?" And they're, "Ah, yeah. And that's how British people talk. And they I don't understand you. We'll just like forget it. And then David comes back. Anyway, but you've never tried a jelly baby.
No.
So this is another in our series of Dave tries a food for the first time.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's crack them open.
Despite the scarf, I'm not really a fan of that sort that is like, I like Doctor Who, so I must like jelly babies. I'll have to try them.
Okay.
I like Doctor Who because I like the TV show. That's it. I'm not going to go buy a TARDIS or something like that.
Well, I'm not offering you a TARDIS. I'm offering you a jelly baby. Now, but you are a fan of the Maynard's kind of...
Sour Patch Kids.
Sour Patch Kids and that kind of thing. This seems to be what those evolved from.
The healthier Cabbage Patch Kids.
Yeah. Now, by the way, it says on the bag here that this is all natural ingredients.
All natural. Colors and flavors.
Yeah, let's remember that feces is natural too. Anyway,
contains fruit juice. And these are Basset, so these are... and they have 1 pound on them.
Yeah.
So you know they're actually British, so I'm going to... take one out of the bag.
Now, what color are you taking?
They actually already smell pretty awful.
Okay, what color you got?
I got red, or it's kind of...
It's not red.
It's not red, no. It's kind of... It looks...
kind of urine colored.
It's not urine colored. It is a pink.
And what does it look like?
It looks like it's covered in wax. Mm-hmm. Don't you think so?
Sure. It looks... I'm gonna help myself to one as well.
Go ahead, take one.
All right, I'm gonna actually try and get a red one. All right, so now...
What did I... yours is the same color as mine.
No. Mine's red.
Oh, okay.
Yours is urine color.
Not yellow.
Okay, ready? So you do yours first, because I know what these taste like.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, and 1, 2, 3, go. No, you're first. 1, 2, 3. We're not doing the same time. You're doing yours first, because we want to get separate reactions. Go.
1, 2, 3.
And it goes to his mouth. All right, so he's chewing it. He's savoring the flavor, seeing what he thinks. All right, while you do that, I'm now going to put it in my mouth.
Yeah.
There we go. It's softer than you'd expect.
Exactly. I was expecting like a jujube kind of a thing.
Yeah, you're expecting like a more resistant, some chew. Mm-hmm. It's got kind of a cornstarchy powder around it.
Yeah.
Like it's a baby that's just been powder on it.
They don't want them to stick together in the package, so they have a coating on them.
Right. That's never a problem with any other, like your Sour Patch candies, though, right? They don't
stick
together.
Yeah, but they have that coating on them. They have the sour coating.
You do not have to chew. This dissolves in your mouth instantly, pretty much. It's just like giving up the ghost and it's spreading all over your tongue.
It's kind of odd.
All right. Now you're...
I can see why it was okay for the Beatles to be pelted with them.
Mm. That is the other pop culture element to these candies is...
George Harrison, when asked what their favorite candy was, or what his favorite candy was, he said jelly babies.
Right.
And forever after, girls or boys, maybe, they would throw them at them during the concert to say, here's some jelly babies. And then when they came to the States... there were no such thing as jelly babies, so they started throwing jelly beans at them, and jelly beans are a lot different in hardness, in peltiness. So it's more like having gravel thrown at you. So wherever they went, they were being showered with gravel.
Well, before that, people would throw dried beetles at them.
That's right.
And that was terrible.
No, that's not so bad.
You don't want to get that in your mouth.
We don't want to get in your mouth, but when I saw excuse me. When I saw the
By the way, I'm three deep on these right now. I'm actually not minding these at all.
When I saw the Dead Kennedys perform when I was younger, Jello Biafra, he wore a stocking like over his face the whole show, as if he was robbing a bank. But the reason that he wore that was to keep the gob from getting in his mouth while he was singing. Because this was at that point in any kind of movement where you reach the decadent stage where it no longer has a natural life. It's just become its own sort of mythology. And the mythology was that punk bands got spat on. And so when you went to the show, there's like all these people who are pretty new to the scene spitting at the band the whole show. And, you know, and the problem is if you're at the front of the stage, which I was, you were also...
This is the worst story I've ever heard.
Why?
It's terrible. It's so grotesque, but continue.
Yeah, I know. It is awful. And people are just like spitting away and you're just...
Yeah.
You're a target as well.
Oh, what a terrible story.
It's terrible. You're really enjoying those jelly babies, huh?
They're pretty good, yeah.
But yeah, so he would wear this mask so he could open his mouth up while he was singing and not...
Worst story ever.
And is that bad?
I'm so repulsed by this story.
Really? Why?
I can barely keep eating these jelly babies.
But I never saw that with any other band. Like Black Flag, no one spat at them. But of course, Henry Rollins would have got off the stage and killed you.
Yeah, he would have killed you. Yeah. That's the thing. You got to like be able to think you can take the lead singer in a fight.
Yeah, no, you can't. He would swing from the stage.
Yeah, and rightfully so.
Most cases, he was in the right.
I'm really glad that podcasting has not gotten to the point where people spit on us yet. We're not that popular yet. The spitting has begun.
That's right. That's a sign of popularity, is being spat on.
Right now, it's just them looking at us going like, oh, I didn't expect them to look like that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's nothing visual to this. Why'd we come out? There's just...
So
are they going to sit there for the whole show? Oh, boy.
You think that's what people think if they come out
what
to see
us? What do
you
think Ian was trying to do with his hair today? What do you think the what do you think that looked like when he first left?
That's how I feel. That's how I feel today. You did the Critical Hit show last night.
Yes, I did.
And you had some big changes.
Our live Dungeons & Dragons show, that's right. Yeah. We had one of the characters died on the show, which was kind of interesting. It's interesting to Joss Whedon it every so often.
Okay.
We actually did a fake Joss Whedon out because we had like two characters really fall in love. And we're like, that's what Whedon would do? No, we killed a character, Etta,
okay.
Who's also a character, who's our only... a pre-existing character from Standard Action, like a web series called Standard Action.
Yeah,
it was interesting because we're trying to play it for like the real emotions as well as the comedy.
Okay,
and I don't know if we succeeded, but people seem to like it. And it was interesting. But the nice thing now is we're kind of a clean slate. We're now all characters that we've created in this show, and now we can do some other stuff with it, like. We're looking at doing a web comic now,
okay,
with our characters. So it'd be kind of fun. So those of you that can't come out to see the show, which of course is all of you that do not live in the Vancouver area, we'll be able to put something up pretty soon and show that to you.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
great. It was interesting. Now you were asking me a question earlier at dinner.
Yeah.
While you had now before the show, I'm not going to reveal what David had a burger and a corn dog appetizer.
Don't worry. I'm glad you didn't reveal that.
No, I wouldn't do that. That's your personal business.
Yeah.
It's no one's business that you ate a bucket of corn dogs. Anyway, they do sell a bucket of corn dogs at the place we went.
Did you have one?
What?
Did you try?
I was just trying to save your life.
Okay.
We all had one of your corn dog buckets.
Yeah.
And you still had plenty of corn dogs in your bucket.
I did have. I had three left after I shared them.
Like in the song, I got a bucket full of corn dogs.
Yeah. But let's be specific.
Let's be frank.
Let's
with
be
our
frankly,
hot dog chance.
There are mini corn dogs.
There are very mini corn dogs.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Not full size ones.
That would be ridiculous.
I would be dead.
That'd be decadent. We wouldn't
do it. We'd be decadent.
I'd
be spitting
society.
At them.
But we got into a discussion about characters on stage. Now,
yeah. Characters in any situation. This performing as a character, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But specifically in the show, I play both myself and then I play a character. So off the top of the show, I play myself and then I play a character. And the host hosts the show as his own name, and who's also the Dungeon Master, but it's him as his name. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about something that was happening in his own life that's his to reveal. He enjoys corn dogs. And
so we're saying buckets of them.
And you were saying, yeah, but that's just his character. That's not him.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, but that is him as well. He would be honest about the situation in his life that this. And you went, but yeah, but that's not what on stage, no one's themselves.
Yeah.
Even if they go by their own names.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're playing a version of yourself.
Right.
You're presenting yourself as you think other people would want to see you.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Now, let me ask you this.
That would be the same with us doing this show. We present a version of ourselves. I mean, we're pretty honest, but we reach a point in our honesty where we're not going to go all out.
Where I stop is where it affects other people. You know,
sure,
I can't reveal secrets that other people would have or things that would be connected to me. Though, generally, I try to be as straight as possible on here with what happens. But just talking specifically about...
But you're not 8 feet tall, which you've been claiming since the show started.
That's right, because, you know, I want to meet a giant. And I feel the only way to do that is to convince people that I'm a giant.
Sure.
I want to be best friends with a giant, Dave. I've always wanted that. I want to ride on his shoulders, and I want to look like a big man. I love Oscar Wilde, The Selfish Giant, one of my favorites. I'll dress up like Jesus. Anyway. But no, it's interesting because when you say, you know, that you're not yourself on stage or you're not yourself here, I feel we're pretty close to ourselves here. Like people have met us who have just known us from here.
Yeah.
And they don't do they're not jarred by, whoa, that's not... You two don't talk like that to each other. Look, if you heard us at dinner and you heard us now, aside from my enunciation being excellent because I have a broadcaster's voice, there's not a lot of difference.
There's not. And we don't have food in our mouth. That's the only difference.
Well, we did a couple of seconds ago, and I'm going to have some again.
We didn't. Yeah. Besides spitting food at each other while we talk, that's the only difference between the show. And we have the spit guards in between the microphones and us.
But I don't necessarily think
I think we...
something to say.
I just
want to
say
please.
That I think that... You do consciously present yourself when you are in a situation in a performance situation.
Now let me ask you this.
Okay.
Is there any difference between how you present yourself at work and how you present yourself like in other situations? No, you're not a person who generally, you know, you're not in the customer service. You do some of that. You've been on phones with people, but for the most part, you don't. But like around your workmates, are you you or are you work you?
I'm pretty much me. Mm-hmm. I don't really have an off switch for me. So, but I mean, there's people out there that have better social filters than I do, you know, so they behave in a way that's more appropriate to situations, you know.
Yeah.
I don't. I find that very difficult to do.
So where are you you? Is that just home?
I would say at home, yeah.
Just home is where you're you.
You're going to hear my worst opinions about things. You're going to hear my most ignorant things that I would think of saying at a moment. You'll hear in those situations that I would I would filter more here than I would
Now, tomorrow we're going to a party at a friend's house. Okay,
We're going to a party at the county jail.
Oh, really? What's happening there?
I believe there's going to be a prison ban that wails.
And then?
I believe someone's going hunting quail.
Really? Because that sounds something like something a hound dog would do. And Dave, you ain't nothing but a hound dog.
That's why I'm going.
No, we're going to a party at a friend's house. Now, yes. We all...
Former friend of the show.
That's right.
David Fine.
We're going to have lots of former friends of the show there. So, when you're there, are you going to be you? Or are you going to be Party Dave there? Is that a different person from who you were considering? It feels like you're thinking that you've got a core personality.
Yeah.
And then there's a variation on it. And like you're like that Elmer Fudd cartoon where like now time to put on the hat.
Yeah.
And now here's the podcasting hat. Here we go. And now here's the work hat. And now here's.
Let me think of it a different way or approach it in a different
way. Please turn it around.
Let me turn this on you.
Okay.
No.
Is it not true, sir?
Did you not?
Are you now or have you ever been?
Did you not on February 22nd?
Say it was a lovely day on February 21st. Answer the question, sir.
Answer the question. You can't handle the truth.
That would actually be a really good game show. Just like where answer you ask a person a question and just like, how many provinces are in Canada? Answer the question.
Ooh, that would be tricky.
Yeah, and you can only yell your answer.
10.
Well, that'd be interesting too. Sorry. You have 3 contestants.
Yeah.
You have microphones in front of them. And whoever yells their answer the loudest, they win it, right? It's got to be a correct answer.
Yeah.
Yell the loudest. Now, the thing you've got to consider with this game is you're going to be going a half hour. So you can't scream the whole time. You got to pace this out, brother.
Yeah.
So you got to like get some good pipes in you. So,
or
yeah.
You may be a person who can bellow a lot louder than other people.
Perhaps. And if so, you will win. But can you keep it up for the whole time?
See, I wouldn't be very good at that. I don't have a good projecting voice.
Interesting. All right. But maybe your instinct to win will kick in and then you'll do that. Anyway, that's answer the question, sir. That's a game show I am now copywriting. Okay. Please continue with your question. And I will eat a jelly baby.
Okay. Would you, to me, I think that I present in a different way on, say, Completely Beatles or Totally Tintin than I do on Sneaky Dragon. In Sneaky Dragon, I play a different sort of Dave, you know, and I sort of play a dumb Dave. I'll say silly puns or I'll make a silly joke or I'll pretend not to understand something. I'll claim that, you know, something is the fourth dimension when I clearly know it's not. And
right, the band's name is the Fifth Dimension.
It's the Fifth Dimension, and I'll insist on that, and make people mad at me on Facebook and things like that. So to me, that's fun.
That's playful, Dave.
But it's playful. But it's me playing a character of myself.
I think though, with Totally,
would you say that's true?
Well, here's the thing. I think with Totally Tintin or Completely Beatles, you have a reverence for the source material that I don't necessarily have.
Yeah,
and so I think you want to honor the source material more than I give a damn about. So that's what enters into it.
Yeah,
I think you. So yeah, you and so you present things with more gravitas, mm-hmm. I would say, than I necessarily do on the show.
Yeah.
Which is why the first reviews of all those shows are usually, why didn't that guy shut up? Because usually people that really care about it, you know, that are also, I'm on Team Dave with the, everyone be quiet. We're going to listen to this. Mm-hmm. And then what happened? Uh-huh. It's like, all right. So I think that's probably what colors your you would have a harder time doing a goof around on Tintin. Maybe if we did like an episode at the end and made a bit of a goof around, you'd be okay with it. Or a goof around on the Beatles, perhaps. But you want to get like so many facts out. Yeah. You want to get so much out.
Yeah.
And there probably isn't enough space, even in the long episodes that we do, to get that out that you have that drive. Maybe if there was there's topics that I'm incredibly passionate about that I'm sure that I, you know, basically shift into a different mode over that I treat very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you think you're a different Dave on this than that?
Yeah, I think I play a version of myself.
Okay. So the only place that you don't play a version of yourself, do you feel that's when you're at a friend's house, do you think you're playing a version of yourself? No,
I
think you're you.
I'm honest there.
Okay.
Because so that's not really a performing situation. You're just there visiting.
Okay. But yeah. At a party tomorrow, are you Party Dave or are you or are you going to be Honest Dave?
Well, what's the difference?
Yeah, that's my question. Because you've set up the situation that like...
But I'm talking about performing. I don't think a party is a performance.
I don't know. I think it is a little bit. Like, to me, it is.
No wonder you don't like parties. You put a lot of pressure on yourself.
No, I think you... Here's the thing. It feels similar to when I used to be, like, in the service industry.
Yeah.
You're behind a counter or...
That's when you're in the Navy?
That's right. When you can sail the seven seas.
Yeah.
That's a song by the Fifth Dimension.
Remember them.
That's right. Dave thinks there's only four dimensions. Whatever. But no, I was still myself,
mm-hmm.
but I was a polite self who had a job to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, if someone was talking to me, you know, I wasn't a big mover of merchandise. You know, I'd still be me. And yeah. I feel like when I'm on stage, I'm basically me. But how I was describing it to you over dinner was someone like David Letterman.
Yeah.
So when you see David Letterman on TV, is that David Letterman, David Letterman? Or is David Letterman, when he's with his family, David Letterman? Or is David Letterman, you know, which is real? And I think both are real. Both are personality elements.
Both are real, but one is a projection of David, of a David Letterman for us, for our benefit.
But also, it's also him. Like, it's a personality. Like, you're not someone, you're not creating
someone
new.
No, I'm not saying I'm not making something up.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying it's a projection or it's a filtered version of me, or it's an exaggerated version of me, or it's a
right. But I think it's all you though. It's like you, and again, it's tough because your performance is a little different than you know what a traditional performance is. But I think like you when you're working on a title card,
yes,
you're a different guy working on the title card than you are probably when you're talking with your family or with friends. You're then the introverted Dave. Then you're the focus Dave, and you're Dave in your own head. But that's still Dave.
Yeah.
And Dave talking on this podcast is still Dave. But Dave talking on this podcast couldn't do that drawing while you're talking on the podcast, because that's two totally different Daves, I would think.
Yeah, it is hard. I can't talk.
Or if we set up the microphones at your home during a dinner and had your family around you, and they were all leaning in and listening, we'd have a very different conversation.
Yeah.
Because you'd then be Dad Dave, you know, Family Dave.
Yeah.
I love that show, The Family Dave. Have you seen
great.
That one?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, some say the older seasons are funnier, but I think it's so much better drawn now.
I think so. And I just like when I fight the chicken.
Yeah. I thought you crossing over with The Simpsons was a bit much, but.
I don't remember that.
What you gonna do?
I don't remember that
what
at all.
What you gonna do? I don't know. I feel like for myself, when I'm missing, okay, my performance self, whether improv or stand up, and those are very similar personas actually, when I'm missing one of my personas or one element of my personality,
then I
get messed up. I feel like, you know, when I don't do enough performing, I feel weird. When I don't do enough drawing, which is super introverted stuff, then I feel weird. When I don't do enough stuff with my wife, I feel weird. When I don't do enough social stuff with like meeting with friends and having dinners, I feel weird. And there has to be a balance for me, but I think it's all part of the same, it all comes from the same source. It feels like a flower, everybody. It's like petals coming out of the middle of the flower, but it's all the same flower.
But thinking about your stand-up, we've talked about this before, and you have said that you feel awkward if there's people in the audience that you know when
right.
you're doing stand-up. Because you are presenting a different person than who you are in that situation. You are exaggerating you're sort of tailoring yourself towards the material.
What it is, though, is this. It's like if you're telling a story and you know, okay, you're telling a funny story. You know a funny story about something. So something that happened in high school.
Yeah.
And so this is a story you like telling. So you know you've told the story over and over again.
Yeah.
And over the course of telling it, you know what works and you know what doesn't.
You know the beats,
you know the
you
hits,
know the, yeah.
you know the misses.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you're sitting next to someone who was in high school
and
go like, that wasn't Shop.
Yeah.
That wasn't metal shop. That was wood shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So I'm walking. I'm in wood shop, and the teacher's saying, okay, whatever you do, don't cut off your fingers.
Oh no, that's not what the teacher said that day.
Yeah.
Because first thing you said, he said that was actually a woman that day, because it was a substitute teacher.
Yeah. Don't you remember?
Stuff.
Oh, we were all worried about Clifford Olson, the serial killer, and he killed that kid, and so we're all like, we were in mourning that week. Like, okay, yeah, that's all. those are important details. They're important to you. But I've trimmed the story. I've tightened the story. And when you're seeing stand-up, what you're seeing someone do is try to take, if you're telling a story or even a joke, you try to trim all the fat off it you can. You highlight certain elements. You tone it. You make it, you know, the best story you can. And sometimes you do exaggerate or delete things that someone who was actually there would think, oh, and you also do that with your personality, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I go like, I'm nervous around dogs. But you had a dog for 15 years. Yes, I did. But I'm also, coincidentally, I'm also nervous around dogs. That's a good point, person that knows me really well. Nice. But the other thing is, you might be telling a truth on stage that you would not necessarily tell your friend.
Yeah.
So you might, you know, expose something on stage that would you'd feel more comfortable telling this truth to strangers who you then don't have to have a follow-up conversation in the car on the way home, mm-hmm. and just like, molested, huh? Like, you don't want to, you don't
need. It's hard to bring it up.
Yeah, it's, yeah, but it was a pretty good gig, right? Yeah, it was weird that you sent him that card. Anyway, the point is, yeah, but I think it's all true. Like, I think when you saw David Letterman, on his show, that was David Letterman.
Well, I mean,
but you didn't see the David Letterman who's seducing interns.
No,
you didn't see the David Letterman with his son. You didn't see the nervous David Letterman writing those bits and pacing and like, I don't know if this is going to work backstage. You didn't see any of that.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't see David Letterman, mm-hmm. and how he deals with Jimmy Walker backstage. You know, he's very friendly on stage. Maybe, you know, this was a guy who like gave him money when he needed to, and is related. You don't know, but I think it's all the same dude for the most part.
It is, but yes, you're right. It is the same person. It's just that I think that when we go on stage, we present a version of ourselves that we want people to see. You know, mm-hmm. and so
you do that when you're stopped by a cop, though, too.
Sure. Sure.
You're not the wise ass to the police officer.
You can be as phony as you want. I mean, my breath.
Is that phony, though?
It's phony.
I don't know. I don't know if being.
If you were smiling at a policeman so you can get out of a ticket, that's phony. My brother got pulled over one time in my dad's car.
Okay.
It's the true story. So.
All right. Trim the fat on this story.
I'm not trimming the fat.
By the way, I'm so sorry that I'm eating jelly babies for this.
Yeah, quit it. Plus, they're supposed to be mine. And you've eaten them all.
No, go ahead. The rest are yours.
No, I don't care.
I've ordered you another bucket of corn dogs.
Thank you. So he gets pulled over. He's in my dad's car. And he sees the policeman. Of course, the policeman's sitting there in his car doing stuff on the computer, whatever, looking, checking out. And so my brother's like, oh my God, how am I going to get out of this ticket? I can't afford a ticket. I know. I'm going to present myself as like the squarest dude that's ever lived. And this policeman's going to be like, this guy is a straight arrow. I'm not going to bother giving him a ticket. Because he is so square.
Right, because police officers
strictly
love squares.
L7, daddy-o.
Yeah, they love nerds.
So my brother turns on and turns up very loud my dad's barbershop quartet practice tape. So he's sitting in the car, and it's loud. He's got the windows rolled up.
Down by the
That's
old
right.
man.
But the coming out, you know, so the policeman can't, you know, the policeman's walking up to the car, and all he hears is, down by the old down by the old where I first, you know, and so then the policeman, you know, wind your window down. My brother winds your window down. Suddenly this blast of barbershop quartet music comes into his face, you know. Sweet Adeline, sweet Adeline. And the policeman's like, could you please turn that off, sir? Because you aren't fooling anyone ever, you know? In those moments, there's no way that my brother doing 170 kilometers an hour down that 80 kilometer hour road is going to be doing it listening to barbershop quartet music. He did not fool anyone.
Okay, so you're.
But he tried to present
something
that would get him out of that.
Let me
moment.
Say this. You're crossing the border.
By the way, that's phony.
That's right. You're crossing the border.
Okay.
And the border guard is talking to you.
Yeah.
Are you jokey Dave or are you all business Dave?
I'm usually jokey Dave.
Whoa! That's someone with dual citizenship who cannot be turned back.
Yeah. Okay. I don't have dual citizenship. I could be not let into Canada.
Not let into Canada, that's right.
I can't be kept out of the States, but I could theoretically be not allowed back
into
Canada.
But when you're going into the States, most of us are very polite.
Oh, I'm very polite. I'm not being a jerk. I'm not sassy Dave.
Now, is polite Dave real Dave?
Is polite Dave real Dave in that situation?
No, let's just go as polite Dave, real Dave. It's polite Dave, Dave.
Well, I'm a polite person, so yeah, I'm not a jerk.
Okay.
I mean, if in real life I was an abusive, insulting, competitive jerk, And I present myself in the show as not none of those things,
right.
As the friendliest guy going,
right?
You know, loves everybody, mm-hmm. You know, has such great things to say about everybody. That's, you know, I'm presenting myself in a phony way.
I guess I feel like, you know, I did a show.
And that's not. There's lots of people who do that. There's lots of actors and performers who are absolute monsters.
Yeah.
You know, and if people knew what they were really like, you know, like look at that comedian. What was his name? The Shelley Berman. You know, he was a very popular comedian.
That would not have been the guy that I would have picked if you were like, you know, think of that comedian, Shelley Berman. Yes. Really?
I'm glad you went there. First of all,
Dave aging himself again.
Well, it's not like I know him personally, but this is a story. He
Rory Calhoun.
Was he a comedian?
You remind me of a young...
You remind me of a young John Barrymore. He was a very popular comedian.
Yeah.
And he agreed to be part of this sort of documentary about him and a sort of interview and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And how he presented himself was so obnoxious
mm-hmm.
that it destroyed his career. Literally, figuratively,
yeah.
Absolutely destroyed his career. Well, like he never recovered from that.
He was at a Friars Club thing a while back and Gilbert Gottfried was performing.
Okay.
And Gilbert Gottfried was doing a bunch of blue material.
Okay.
And he was getting so mad he wanted to beat him to death. Like he really wanted to assault him. Like he had to be held back. Like I'm gonna kill this son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Like it was a huge thing. And I was like, yeah, you know, which and there, you know, I don't want to psychoanalyze anybody, but like there's a reason sometimes, you know, you go like, well, why wouldn't this funny person be nice? And it's like, well, sometimes the reason that you're funny is because you got to find a way of not being nice that won't get you killed by somebody, like speaking of a person who's trying to beat someone up. So, you know, you use the sense of humor instead.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's that. I mean, again, yeah, no, people do present themselves in a certain way and then there's other ways they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say generally, like, here's what I was going to say was like, last night, there's a part of the show where I play myself. So I came out and I did some nerdy thing where I kind of broke down because the name of our town that we're in our D&D thing is Tarkendale.
Mm-hmm.
And Eric, our dungeon master, the story takes place in North Delta, where you and I are also both mm-hmm. from. So I realized something, because I'm a nerd, on the way there, that like, oh, I can get Delta out of Tarkendale. What's left? Oh, an N. N Delta. Oh, I got North Delta out of Tarkendale. What's left? R-A-K-E. Oh, rake. Like, as in a rakish wit. Well, this is a funny version of Tark. I can probably make an argument that Tarkendale is actually North Delta, the whole thing, and I was planning on that. But while I'm presenting that, I feel like I'm actually kind of being me. You know, I think I'm as you say, you're an exaggerated version of you, mm-hmm. but the amount of times that I'm an exaggerated version of me, that just feels like I stretch myself every day. Like, if I have to talk on the phone with someone, I'm an exaggerated version of me. If I'm talking to Shaw Cable, I'm an exaggerated version of me. Today I had to go and try to apply for renter's insurance.
Okay.
So that's not normally me. So I'm a more proper version of me. And I'm like, I'm the version of me that asks a lot of questions and doesn't try to get ripped off and listens a little more intently and like, wait, did you say this? Because I don't think, wait, can we get earthquake insurance? Well, what? How much more is that? And all these other things. I'm like, I'm stretching who I am every day in many different ways. And maybe on stage, it's a little more because I've got to make a bigger version of myself to be heard. But I think the stuff I say for the most part on stage, unless I'm completely in character, it's generally me. I think you can snap it back in the same way that the character that I came up with in my comic when I was doing
mm-hmm.
that guy, you could go, well, that's not you. I was there at that incident and you did not act like that.
Yeah.
And yet I still feel that they're autobiographical comics. The ones I did that were autobiographical.
That's a bit different in a way, but when you're on stage being you in the show,
mm-hmm.
you're bringing part of yourself there. If you had a terrible day and something really bad happened and you just felt so low, you couldn't believe it. When you get on stage, you can't be that person. You have to...
I have a stand-up. I've done it.
A stand-up, but as Ian on the Critical Hit Show, when you come out on stage, you have to be... Ian coming over to play Dungeons and Dragons.
No, here's the thing. No, let me slap. When I was renovicted, I came out and that was the first thing I talked about because that was on my mind.
Yeah,
and I did have to find a joke about it because mm-hmm. I didn't want to just come out and go like, this all sucks. But the way I deal with things in life is finding humor in it too. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was legit.
Yeah.
But I did come out and was like, if there's something real that's going on, like if I'm going to Comic Con or if I'm going to something or something has just happened that's a big event, I will, you know, probably not a death or something like that, but mm-hmm. something else, I will bring it up, hopefully, and try to find an angle on it for that. I'll try.
Okay.
But please continue.
I have nothing left to say.
Well, very good. I won. Hooray! I love winning. And how I won was being louder.
Do you feel like you won?
Simply
I don't know.
Simply louder. No, I mean, feel there's like no winning. It's opinion.
I just feel like we've stretched the elastic band as far as we can in one particular direction. So time to let it go so it hits us in the face.
You mean this conversation?
Yeah.
You're doing that on this show a little bit now. We're like, well, I think we've talked that to death. And moving on to now going on. But that's for absolutely fine.
Why do you feel, I just feel like we've done it a couple times. Because you just reach a point where you're saying the same thing in a different way.
And that's why people tune in, to hear the same thing in a different way.
Is that right?
Well, here's a weird thing.
That's not true.
I was watching Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee yesterday.
Yes.
And
the reason we watch that show is because it has a host that we like, a genial host. And then it has a guest that we like.
Who may be a sociopath. You don't know. He seems like he could, if someone said at some point that Jerry Seinfeld found 20 bodies in his basement, you'd go, yeah, I could sort of see that. He's that kind of like on the surface guy, nice and calm, American Psycho type, but very pleasant, you know, and, you know, just seems to be at that level and that's fine.
But he is a genial host of the show. The projected, the projection of himself that we see is a very genial host of
until
this show.
Until yesterday's show, yeah. I disagreed on yesterday's show. I thought yesterday's show was the first one that he went, oh, that was an unpleasant version of him.
I haven't watched very many of them for the last little while, but...
I will just finish with the point that why I brought it up, though, was Bill Maher was on the show.
Oh, okay.
And the two of them were at a restaurant. It felt like Jerry was being rude to the waiter.
Oh, okay.
And as a Canadian, I cannot abide rudeness.
No.
But I wanted to see the Bill Maher.
Even to the worst waiter.
Yeah, I wanted to see the Bill Maher thing because, like, basically, if you see a Bill Maher, he talks about religion.
Yeah.
He talks about, you know, the Muslim thing.
Yeah, terrorism.
He'll talk about, Muslim and the connection with terrorism. He's got, like, his greatest hits, you know? And I was like, it'll be nice to see him on a show where he doesn't have to talk about that because it's not one of those news broadcasts where they're just countering what he said on the show.
Yeah.
Let's see what he talks about. And it was all that. It was just, again, he kept trying to bring all that stuff again. And Jerry's kind of swatting it away a little bit and trying to talk about other things like, what kind of underwear you wear? You know, things like that. But it's like, all he has is that, it's just got this. He's just stuck in this loop. And it was just
a drag. That's the projection of himself. Now, there is a real Bill Maher that doesn't talk about those things with people. You know, that just plays pool or, you know, hangs out with his wife or girlfriend.
He talked about Beatles, and that was the most interesting thing to me, because it was like, oh, he talked about how much he loved the Beatles, and I've never heard him talk about that before. I was like, oh, that's interesting, and then it was like, just for a few seconds. But
So, you know, there's a moment of reality, there's a real moment of him, but other than that, you're getting his persona, you know, that this guy who is down on religion, doesn't like Muslim terrorists, was afraid of them or something. I don't really know what his thing is. I don't really pay much attention to Bill Maher. Everybody.
He's also, you know, of the, you know, people are too PC nowadays and whatever. And and that's usually what someone thinks. I'm just going to stereotype here, which is an un-PC thing to do. Or maybe it is a PC thing to do. A lot of times when someone brings up, you know, things, you know, the world's too PC now. You know, it's another way of saying, like, it's not music, it's just noise. It's a way of saying, I just want to let everyone know I'm old. Things have really changed in the world. It's now all really this. And it's like, is it? Or has it always been like it is? And people in college have always yelled things because they just got out of their parents' homes and they're not behaved yet. You know, they're young.
Here's the thing,
and
though.
Yelly.
I'm going to come down on this and just say it's okay to feel uncomfortable in the world you live in.
Yeah.
It's okay to feel uncomfortable. And humor can come out of that. If that's how they feel, then make it funny. Don't make it complainy.
Right.
Don't grumble.
Well, and also
make it amusing.
Don't blame the world necessarily. You know, it's like, it's not every young person in the world has not just changed.
No.
It's probably the guy saying it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's probably, that. And so, you know, when he's doing jokes about, like, Chinese drivers, you go like, oh, you. And it's like, I get that you're doing them ironically.
Yeah.
And then the second time, I get you're doing it ironically. Now, the 25th time, you know, is there another angle on this that you could throw out there right now?
We know that many of them are bad drivers. That is just a fact.
That comedians have told us
for the last
75 years.
Yes. So now it's time.
Yeah.
At least women drivers have got a break. Finally, you know, I have this hilarious book at home. It's illustrated by the Vip, the cartoonist Virgil Parch. Vip.
Okay.
It's just like, it's the most ridiculously like staunchly 1950s, you know, women drivers driving manual. You know, you just read it, you just can't help yourself. But I mean, my wife taught me to drive.
Yeah.
So the mere fact of my even mentioning women's driving would be like so hypocritical. I might as well just, you know, literally go and break glass in my glass house. Because it's just, I shouldn't even be allowed to think it, you know.
Right.
So,
And you can do a woman's driver joke. But what you do, you might as well then come out and just like put a rocking chair down and just sit on a porch and yeah. sip a glass of sarsaparilla, because you're looking like a very old person right now. You can do it.
And if the
knock
joke
yourself
works,
out.
If the joke works.
Yeah. Well, you can take like a Rudy Valley megaphone and do all your jokes through that. And just like, you know, two Jews walked into a bar. Do-de-o-do. You know, knock yourself out. But don't try to be the. I think that's, again, and I'm projecting. But I think he thinks of himself as the young hip guy still.
Yeah,
and not. When you're the hip guy, it's tough also when you get older.
Yeah.
And you're single. Mm-hmm. And, you know. It's tough to be that guy.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, and it's easy to just go, you're all wrong, all of you. And then, of course, you go out and tying it back into Dave Sim. I think one of the problems Dave Sim had was he had a fan base that was always going, you're right, Dave.
Yeah.
And I think Bill Maher goes out, you know, every few nights to do stand-up, and these are all people that are already on board, so yeah. preaching to the choir, yeah. you're correct, we love you. It's like, well, these guys seem to know what's what, and I talk to the people, and I understand what the people want. No, the people pay tickets to see you, so they like you already. Yeah. Now, talking to random other people would be a different thing. Yeah, those people are all messed up. Oh, I don't know if they are.
But does he get a bit of that on his show, where he has people on the show that aren't part of his cheering squad?
Yeah, that is true. You know, he does try to do that, but it always comes
but
back.
You can try to do that, but if you're the host of the show, you have the hammer.
You do have the hammer, and it just seems like he's got nothing more to say past those points.
Yeah.
And it just feels, there was a thing on in that episode. Yeah, Jerry just seemed to be like, I really enjoy talking to you. He was very, very polite to him.
Yeah.
Because he's got a lot of respect for comedians, maybe not for waitstaff. I think, you know, he tips very well at the end, and like that makes everything okay. But he wanted to get him out of that loop, break it out. Yeah. Let's talk. And he just couldn't, because yeah. this is what he talks about, and there he goes.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
But there you go. I mean, there's someone who's a projection of himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know him, so I can't speak for sure. He is very short, right?
I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know. But I think, like, if you say every week, went out and for two nights a week, stood in front of a large crowd
yeah.
who was going, Dave, Dave, Dave. Yeah. And then you said your opinions.
I would be a monster.
And your opinions, and everyone, yeah. And at the end, they gave you a standing ovation for whatever you said.
Yeah.
Hooray. That would mess you
huzzah.
Up.
Can yeah. I say huzzah?
Yeah.
Applesauce.
We did talk actually about dinner too, where Seinfeld said an interesting thing about, on a separate situation, about after a show, you're so buzzed and,
yeah.
and messed up as a performer, you mm-hmm. can't talk to people. So he has to go and splash cold water on his face.
Yeah.
And that's completely true. You've got to, after a show, you're so, ah, splash, 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 splash. You know, now you're a person again.
Get grounded.
Yeah.
Ground yourself. Yeah. I've never experienced that. Just want to point that out, because I don't perform in that way. But I have friends who perform, you and other friends, and I've noticed that in them, that this kind of feeling of almost like, man, I'm completely, I don't even need to be here. Like, as far as this person's concerned, I am this
no.
wallpaper. So it's just an interesting feeling, you know, because before you go there, you're like, oh, I'm with Dave, we're friends and stuff like that. And then when the show's over, you're like, I could do without Dave. That's what you feel like, because this person is so keyed up.
Yeah.
And just so totally focused on what's happening.
And you say, like, let me help you out. I'm going to take some adrenaline and just shoot it right into your heart. You good? Okay. All right. By the way, we've also both just been dodging bullets
yeah.
For the last little while. Okay.
Yeah.
And now let's have a normal conversation.
I'm not being selfish. Because I understand. I withdraw.
My favorite thing, I know what it's like. Yeah. My favorite thing to do after a show, like immediately after a show,
mm-hmm.
is to leave.
Yeah.
Like, and unfortunately, I do get things where, and it's nice that people come to see my show that I know, or family members, or
yeah.
what have you. And then, yeah, have to make conversation afterwards. But my ideal thing is there a back door? Is it not alarmed? Out the back door. And gone.
Yeah.
And I'll talk to you later. And that's fantastic. And then the walk home is just enough of a cool down.
Yeah.
That, like, by the time I get to the house, I'm like, okay, all right. I'm just going to go hang out with the cats for a while. I'm going to go do some dishes. I'm going to do whatever. And just settle down.
Sure.
You know, but I still think the person that I am when I'm jazzed up, that's also me. Do you think, how about this? Let me ask you this. Is working out at the gym, Dave, the same as home, Dave? Because there's something where you're kind of pumped up on dopamine.
Yeah, no, I'm not really
different after,
that
after
way.
You're done with the gym, when you're driving to work or whatever, when you're a little high from the workout.
Yeah.
Is that different, Dave?
No, I don't think so.
But you don't talk to people at the gym, though, so it's hard to say.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I mean, if Lisa comes, I will talk to Lisa.
Right.
But it's pretty short, because I actually don't like talking while I'm working out, because you just stand there and then you get cold, like you warm down. So
mm-hmm.
can't warm down. Got to keep it up. But yeah, no, it's, I don't know. I can, the closest I can think of is drawing. I know when I'm drawing, I have a very hard time concentrating on other people.
Right.
You know, like if someone's there was talking to me and I was drawing, they might as well talk to the wall for all they're going to get out of me. Because even if I'm talking back to them, it's going to be a distracted response. I'm going to be saying stuff in repeating words because I'll have stopped thinking what I'm doing because I'm into what I'm, you know, I'm into the drawing and I'm not thinking of words anymore. So then I'm just like saying, you know, the repeating words because I'm drawing and now I'm going to repeat those words again because I'm still drawing. And okay, now I'm going to stutter because I'm really got something complicated here. So, you know, it's that's the closest I could think of that. Where you're just in a completely different headspace that isn't necessarily...
Now, imagine this.
But inking is different than penciling in that sense, too.
Right. Now, let me ask you this. And then after you finish, say you finish a title card.
Yeah.
Right. And you put it out there for everyone to see.
Yeah.
Now, imagine you had to put it out on a giant screen, and there's an audience full of people.
Yeah.
And now you had to, like, look at them while they look at your work.
That'd be terrible.
That's acting! That's a stage.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And that's why...
And most of them would clap, sure. Right? So you would enjoy it. But it would still be very, very weird. And now I talk to you immediately after that.
Yeah.
You've put it up. It's basically like that Penny Arcade thing we were talking about, that show, TV show. So you've drawn your drawing.
Yeah.
You've put it up.
Yeah.
People look at it. And now I talk to you immediately.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, that'd be so hard.
That wouldn't bother me so much. Because once I'm done, I'm done. I'm not in that space anymore.
Oh, you can snap right out of it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Once I post it, let's say I put it on Facebook or wherever and put it on the website... I'm done. I can walk in the house and I can be like, yep, that was good.
By the way, everyone, this is your third drink. And there you go. By the way, stop at 5 drinks. Even if you hear more than that sirens, because we want you to be safe.
Yeah, we don't want to encourage.
But let me just go back to Bill Maher for one more second if I could. I think here's the thing.
I'm tired of your Bill Maher persona.
Sure. I think people have brought up Jon Stewart on his show. And he's
have
been,
brought him up on his show?
Like, yeah, have brought up Jon Stewart on the Bill Maher show.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Real Time with Bill Maher. And Bill Maher's been kind of dismissive of it.
Okay.
And has mentioned very clearly that his ratings are much better than Jon Stewart's.
Wow.
Because someone mentioned it in a way that like, yeah, he said this and this was a big thing. Yeah, well, just letting you know, our ratings are better than that. Because they talked about a similar topic.
Yeah.
And I went like, yeah, I bet they are. Like with HBO, you know, they're better ratings.
Yeah.
But what's more relevant? And Jon Stewart, if Bill Maher was retiring from his show, it'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's been great having you here. There you go. Jon Stewart's retiring from his show. Oh, no. Oh, okay. Because he's relevant.
Yeah.
You know, he's spawned other shows, you know, John Oliver and The Nightly Show and The Colbert and all this.
Yeah.
And it's like relevant. And he's not relevant anymore. He hasn't got there's no fight that you go, I wonder what Bill Maher's going to say about this.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, he's there and he's sticking around. He's kind of where Letterman was. It's just like, he's still there and it's good. And it's not any different than it was.
Yeah.
It's just not relevant anymore. And if you liked it, that's great. And when he goes, you'll go, oh, there you go. That's too bad. But, you know, now that Letterman's gone, has TV gotten terrible?
Yeah,
like, has it been a huge
vacuum?
Oh, I wish we knew what Letterman was going to say about this topic. It's like, no, it was fine.
Yeah.
And we appreciate what it was. And then it's done. And, yeah, I don't think he'll be able to deal with that. They talked on the comedians thing about, you ever think you're going to be retiring? He's like, no, it's great. I do this show and I love my show. And was like, yeah, he loves his show. And then Jerry gave a little dig about how it doesn't have to be live, you know? Yeah, of course it has to be live because it means this, this, and this. Yeah, no one cares. No one cares that it's live. It doesn't matter. But to Bill Maher, it matters that it's live because people care and they have to hear it right away. And it's live and it's important and it's relevant.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. You could just record it
beforehand.
He's
a newsman.
Yeah, you could record it beforehand. It wouldn't have any effect. It'd be
fine.
He's
not just a comedian. He's a newsman, right? So
he's
giving you the news. He's giving you facts, you know.
Right.
That's important to someone like him.
But he's giving them to you using Johnny Carson's style of delivery off the top. And it's like, even that feels like, yeah, that's fine. That's fair.
I have to admit, I've never watched his show.
That's okay.
I've just never not.
No problem.
Time. I just don't have the time. I have to be very selective in what I watch. I only have time to watch Doctor Who.
And now you can eat jelly babies.
And eat jelly babies. You know what? If I never have jelly babies again, I'll be fine. I will literally live forever without jelly babies.
We were trying to get some sponsorship from Bassett's, and this really is not helping us with that endorsement.
I thought we were trying to get sponsorship from Fred Bassett.
The unfunniest dog. Hey, you and Marmaduke have an unfunny off. Fred Bassett, man, that was the first comic I remember reading and just going, he ain't trying no more. Like, you just see the backgrounds, not even close. You're in the living room. Now what room are you in? Like, that's not a living room. Yeah. You were in a kitchen a second ago.
Yeah.
You don't care. There's no background. There's no joke. Stop it. Though,
different artist and writer now.
His original, I forget who the original cartoonist was. Graham? Alex something.
Oh, is it?
Graham Alex, maybe?
Alex Graham?
Alex Graham, could be. But here was the weird thing as a kid. Like many cartoonists, he did not just do that comic strip.
Oh.
He also did books. And he did books of adult jokes.
Oh, really?
So you would see women in the Fred Bassett drawn style.
Okay.
Nude.
Oh.
With, like, you know,
must be kind of Whitten, though.
The equivalent of, like, blind salesman. Well, I'll open the door naked then.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm here to sell the blinds. Okay, well, first of all, there aren't blind salesmen door to door. Secondly, even if it was a blind salesman, you wouldn't open the door nude because you've got neighbors. There's a lot of problems here. But let me just say, as a young boy, I'm enjoying the nude cartoons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're the best.
But yeah, he did do a bunch of that, much like Dan DiCarlo from Archie. Archie Comics.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of sexy comics.
Yeah, those are really good.
Your Wally Woods, what have you.
Yes. Very,
yeah,
very comely,
back in the day,
comely lasses.
But it was jarring seeing sexy Fred Bassett style.
Yeah, that's odd. That's a weird one.
But Fred wouldn't even give you a punchline.
What
at
about
the
Charles
end.
Schultz's? Those are pretty racy as well.
Good grief!
You know which ones I love though are his church ones, the kind of ones he did for like church newsletters. Have you seen those cartoons?
I think I might have, but please, like, tell me more.
Oh well, they're teen cartoons, so they look totally different, and they are reminiscent of the Peanuts characters. But most of them are kind of, rather than being like orange-shaped heads, they're more like pumpkin-shaped heads because they're growing, and so their heads are lengthening.
And the priest would give communion and would like throw it too fast like the baseball and just knock all your clothes off. Just like flying everywhere.
No, they're much more lighthearted or kind of weird. Like the one I remember is, it's a cover one, and it's like, our topic tonight, what was bugging old Pharaoh? I just love it because it's so weird. It's so of its time. You know, it's so 50s. It's so weird. Like, you just would never have, first, you'd never have anyone draw
that. I would assume the
now.
Plagues. Yeah. That would be what's bugging. You know what's bugging old Pharaoh?
I think what was bugging him before all that? Like,
ask me this question. Let me say,
what was bugging old Pharaoh?
Locusts.
Yeah. Those are bugging him.
Yeah. They're bugging.
I think they were thinking before that. Like, why did he have a stick up his ass and get himself in this situation? That's the question.
Because he was hoping it would turn into a snake.
Although in the Bible, it keeps saying that God hardened his heart. So it seems unfair that he's getting all these terrible things happening to him when it's God.
He's got heart problems.
Yeah. When God keeps hardening his heart, he's like, you know what? I'm going to let all the Jews go. And then God says, no, you're not. I'm going to harden your heart. So you're going to say no. You guys can all not go.
Right,
I didn't mean to say that.
To
what
be
the
fair,
hell?
God had books to sell. You can't just have that story like, let him go. Will do. Oh, I've got so much spaces to fill now. How many more pages? Oh, how about you don't? How about you don't let him go? Okay,
that's
all right. How many plagues?
How many?
One plague. That'll let him go. No. We got a lot of space to fill.
Milk it. You guys are going to wander for 40 years in the desert. 40 years in the desert? That's not fair.
Yeah, if I had more time tonight, I would go through a list of from Save the Cat, which
What's
breaks
that?
Down. It's a book on how to basically write a film.
Oh, okay.
And and it breaks down beautifully what you have to do to make a good film, or
okay.
at least, you know, a Hollywood type movie.
Yeah.
But folks, we're coming up on a hard hour. Dave had 2 hours of sleep last night because he went to his daughter's graduation ceremony.
Went to her commencement ceremony last night.
Right, yep. And you've got work to do tomorrow. We're coming up on midnight here. I don't want to keep you late.
Oh, it's midnight already.
It is past midnight, David.
And the kitties are sleeping.
That's right. Cats. I wish I remembered the tag to cats.
It's
cats. Pee on everything. Oh, I know. I got one. Cats. Yeah. Spay anything. There, that's what
there you go.
Be.
That's it. Yeah.
McCavity. I'm feeling McCavity. Because that's Dentist I'm thinking of. The musical.
that famous musical, Dentist. Yeah, it was I just want to say a couple good things about the commencement ceremony.
Please.
One is that I feel like kids nowadays are better than we were.
Well, you're the reverse Bill Maher.
Yes, I am. Like, one sense you get out of kids, and I'm not going to group them all on this, but one is an incredible sense of leadership amongst each other, like a real community sense with kids that I don't feel like I had when I was in high school.
Yeah,
so much.
Okay.
like I feel when I went to school, it was very cliquey, very niche, and where you fit in, that's where you were. And so there wasn't any attempt in the school to try to bridge groups. You know, it was all kind of everyone for themselves. There were a few people. I was maybe a lucky one that could kind of float between various, you know, groups of popular kids or whatever without, you know, having to be skinned alive. So, you know, I was kind of lucky in that sense, but mostly.
That's interesting, by the way, like that would tie in very well to our previous conversation, but please continue with your current
one. Okay.
Different personalities of Dave that can fit in with different groups.
I don't know if I changed my personality that much. I think I just was a person that got along with people.
Very good.
You know, but they had the girl who did the valedictorian speech. You know, she's doing the valedictorian speech because she got the best marks that year. That's a criteria. I don't think that's a great criteria for having a speech. Like it should be maybe the person who's most interesting in the school should maybe be the school valedictorian.
I don't think we had the person who had the best grades for our valedictorian. Okay. Okay. No, it was my friend Wendy, and I don't think she had the best grades.
So they chose someone who was a good performer, who could sell the message.
Yeah, I think she had good grades, but I don't think she was number one for that. Yeah.
Okay. This girl may not have had the best grades, but she had good grades. You know, she's onwards mm-hmm. and upwards, you know. Her only real impediment in her life is that she plays the ukulele. Other than that,
I'm so sorry.
I know, it's kind of a sad thing. But other than that, it's all looking up for her. Mm-hmm. If only she can get past that. But, you know, she gave a great speech. Just a great speech that was funny, like literally funny. Not just jokes from a joke book, but actual like humorous little things. Like she pointed out that she was taking biology. And actually, it was during biology class that she was informed that she was going to be the school valedictorian. And she came back to class and learned that the sperm that reaches the egg is the strongest sperm, the fastest sperm that can get into the egg. And she said, so really, we're all winners. All of us, you know.
Right.
So, and she just had this great sense of, you know, I can't remember. She went on with more biological detail, which I cannot remember now because I didn't take biology.
But she led with the sperm joke.
She did lead with the sperm joke. Which was good. Like, it was well done. And, like, she really just had a good sense of humor. It wasn't, like,
no, that
the
is
awkward.
A good, that's a good opener.
It wasn't, like, awkward, kind of corny jokes that I've heard before. This is my fourth
right.
school commencement. I've been for my nephews and obviously for Mary and now for Eve. And so it was pretty great. And then Eve herself actually got a laugh from the guy reading because when they come out on stage, they have to like hand them a piece of paper.
Yeah.
And it has something they've written that they want people to read. Most of them are quotes from C.S. Lewis or Dr. Seuss. Eve's a Sagittarius. She enjoys long walks on the beach. She dislikes homework and dislikes people who get mad at her for not doing her homework. That was her. That's good. That's good. I liked hers.
Then the next person. In Narnia.
No.
Turkish Delight.
The C.S. Lewis one was
the sweetest.
C.S. Lewis one was we have better things to look forward to than what we're leaving. Something like that,
sure.
Right? Which is, you know, a good thing to say. You're leaving school, you're going on into another step in your life.
Right.
So let's not dread it, let's embrace it, you know. I know I dreaded it incredibly. I did not enjoy the idea of leaving school. But,
oh, is that right?
Oh yeah, I did not like that idea.
Hmm.
I knew I was a mollycoddled child who was about to be thrown out of the nest.
I had an Ocean's 11 style plan that I put into effect mm-hmm. where I basically just brought everyone I liked to my college and made sure we all got in. Made sure. Like, I was a schemer.
I didn't get included in this.
I made that shit happen because you were a year before me.
Oh, that's right.
If you were, I could have got you in. Yeah. But no, I got a lot of my friends in.
Yeah.
Holy cow, did I ever. It was weird. It's like I was the recommendation for them. But I was like, who's recommending me? Like somehow I got recommended. And I was like, I'm recommending. I speak for all these people. And then I brought them all in. And it was very weird.
Nice.
Yeah. But that was.
So
that
you
was
kept me. You kept school going a bit longer.
I kept the part of school I liked going longer. Because I didn't spend a lot of time in high school because I just like skipped out constantly because mm-hmm. I didn't like school. I was beyond school, I think, when I was in school. So for the most part.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of
one foot out the door and on the bus and on my way to Vancouver.
One interesting thing, and Eve had a picture taken with her art school friends, like the people sat at the table with together.
Right.
They're all kind of like goofy kids with a good sense of humor and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. that's who she likes.
And that's who you need in high school
yeah.
to stay sane.
But one of them was a guy, which I thought was interesting. And what was even more interesting was he was a jockey kind of a guy. He wasn't like a
cool
a geeky kind of a guy. He was he was also in his, there was many of these during the night, which kind of made my stomach turn, which was, and so-and-so wants to thank Du Bois, you know, there was like, oh, over and over again. And when they came out, it was some big guy, you know, that looked like he played rugby or whatever. And I was just like, ugh,
Du Bois. Or as you said, I'd like to thank DeBarge because you love the band.
I love the band DeBarge. The band DeBarge.
And Du Bears.
Du Bears. Du Barge. And so that was kind of, and so he came out, and so he had this combination, which confused me, that he played sports, and you know, wanted to thank Du Bois, and then also that he was part of this art table and a goofy guy.
Sure,
I thought that was kind of, I think that I would kind of put myself there. You know, I kind of straddled. You know, I wasn't completely inept, so I was able to play sports to a degree. I did like physical activity, so I challenged myself. You know, but I also like to spend hours, you know, sitting in the art room.
Yeah. I mean, when we met, we covered a couple of bases that were both kind of hams, but we were also interested in art.
Yeah.
So that covered that. And a lot of times I think I was trying to drag my art friends into performing and dragging my performing friends into art.
Yeah.
Sometimes it worked. Most times it did not.
No, because they're not necessarily.
I'm this and this is all I am.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
They're not necessarily the same thing at all. Do you think, so are actors introverts by nature, or are they extroverts by nature?
I think it's all, well, no, I don't think either.
You can't, I don't mean to think of it as a blanket, but it was sort of an overall thing. Like, I would think of most artists as being fairly introverted in the sense that you have to be able to be willing to spend a lot of time by yourself doing, a solitary activity.
True, but I think what it's mostly is, it's finding a way to control how people see you.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're an actor, that's what you spend your time doing, is you control how people see you.
Oh,
and
really?
What,
so you project project a vision of yourself.
As an actor in a character, I think that's what acting is, right? You bring a character? Look at the dictionary. Mm-hmm. I'm not breaking ground here. But no, I think like generally you try to project, you try to control how people see you. And hopefully you're showing people you. I mean, I think, you know, when you start off, you're in that situation where like, what do you want me to be? I'll be anything. Can you ride a horse? Sure can. Glop, glop, fall, snap, ow, paralysis.
This is a Christopher Reeve story?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
Can you walk? I sure can. Look! Sure, didn't look like he could walk. Sure, I can. I can be anything you want me to be.
I am an actor.
And then over time, you... here's the thing, I think, why actors become jackasses. It's because they spend so much time going, what do you want? What do you want? Mm-hmm. I'll be anything you want. I'll be anything you want. Then when they get a degree of success, well, I'm not being that anymore. I'm going to be what I want. Now I'm in charge, and I'm the guy who says what's what. And they, you know, throw their weight around, and people go, oh, you know, we got 1,000 of you out there. What? Okay, done, and then you're fucked. But yeah, you feel like because you haven't been you and you've done this, you know, you feel you've earned back what you've given, which is, you know, I did all this and I acted like this and no, you just be you through the whole. And also, if you're you, what I found, at least at auditions, there's less of you than there are of other things. So, you know, someone might want you at some point.
Yeah.
And there was a period of time where I was getting a shitload of commercials. And it was also coincidentally the time that I didn't give a fuck at all because I was doing other stuff.
Yeah.
And I just go in and everyone was nervous and sitting around. And I just kind of go in going, I don't care. And just go in and I'd get a commercial, or like I'd go to my apartment and there was a woman who was working in my building who did commercials, and she heard that I did commercials, and she just went, can I take a picture of you in the hallway? Sure. Okay, you got it. What? Okay, sure. And just like thing begets thing. And it was as soon as I stopped giving a fuck, that's when it happened. That's the same thing with almost anything, like the comics. I didn't give a fuck when I was doing my autobiographical comics at all. And that's how I got what I got. It's, But I was trying to be me at least. So
I cared so much.
Yeah.
I cared too much.
Maybe. That's quite possible.
Too much.
I don't think you... I mean, I think you care about... I think you care about the Tintin podcast. I think you care about the Completely Beatles podcast. This one I think you care about, but you forget that you care about it while you're doing it. And so it's good. You can be you in it. I think if you thought about it and thought about the people listening to it,
that would be
trouble.
That's possible. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when people write to us on our message boards and you go, oh shit, people are listening to this.
That's right. That's why I don't respond very much.
Nope. I'm a scared.
Not that I'm a scared. It's just, you know.
Well, you said your piece.
I said my piece. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And what is more than
so hard to write? You got to move your fingers on the keyboard.
It is. It's very difficult.
And also, my other job, I had, strangely, it was a very busy place, but I actually had more time to do things like that. I could actually like go on to the Sneaky Dragon website and make responses and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
At my job I'm at now, I actually have less time. It's strange. I have less time to do things like that. And so I don't really respond. When I'm at home, if I go out to the shop, I go out there specifically to do something. I go out there. I'm like, okay, I got to get totally Tintin edited. So I'm going to go outside, get it done, get it up on, you know, get up on the website. So I got to, you know, dedicate this amount of time to doing that job, you know. I don't go outside and go, oh, I wonder what's going on Facebook. Let's look and see. Maybe I'll go to the website, maybe make some comments there. Nope. No time.
I also want to say, like, when I say don't give a fuck, I was doing the best job I could when I was doing the things.
Yeah, yeah. I know, I understand what you mean.
Yeah, but it's a distinct. I'm not going, I don't give a fuck, bark, bark, bark. I'm like, I don't give a fuck if you like it or not.
Yeah.
That's the don't give
your
a fuck.
Your ego wasn't in the way.
I'm going to paint you a picture. I'm going to put it on the wall. If you like it, that's swell. If you don't, I'm still putting it on the wall. Done.
Yeah, that's a good attitude. I mean, that's what the show is, actually, by the way.
This one, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you don't like it, and people might not, and that's fair.
Sure.
By the way, if you don't like it, you can go review us on iTunes. And if you do like us, you can review us on iTunes.
I can look and see. I can look back through our stats, and I can see the rise and fall of interest in Sneaky Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when we did Completely Beatles, we had quite a few people from Completely Beatles go, oh, I like them on the show. I'm going to listen to this other show that they do. And then they listened, and they went, you know what? I don't like them that much. And they moved on. I mean, that's fine. Other people stayed. Some people moved on. That's fine, right? You can't force the show if people listen to the show. That's just the way it is.
So. And then there's other situations where someone will, you know, start listening. And then this happens like sometimes where they go, I'm listening to all of them.
Yeah.
And you go, don't. Yes. That's too much. I've lived it. And I don't think you should do that. That's not healthy. Okay. But then I'm listening to them all backwards. Wait, no, I don't know if. Okay. Fair enough.
It is a lot. It's a lot of listening. I don't recommend it.
Yeah. And I'm going to say, like an art project, I do feel like once we've done it, it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, however many people listen to it, to me at least, I don't really care. I really don't. Like, it's out there and it's fine. And if people want to listen to it, that's swell. And if people don't want to listen to it, that's also swell. It's okay. At one point, I know we'll mention in the future, hey, you know, we used to do a podcast. Oh, so that was in, like, you'll be able to know the year we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because those were the years people did podcasts.
Yeah.
Before everyone 3D printed pictures of their penises, and that just took off.
3D printers. You scare me.
4D printers, though.
40, that's fine.
Yeah.
So then they'll print sound.
Wow, man.
Mm-hmm.
You just blew my mind.
I did.
Anyway, listen, Dave's got to get some sleep.
I really do.
Now, if you want to talk to us, we'd like hearing from you. Dave won't respond. SneakyDragon.com is our website. We have a message board there. If you post something on there, then you're probably someone we know. Or, we actually don't know a lot of our listeners personally.
To be honest, I hardly know.
That's not true, but it is a way of keeping in touch with other people that I know sometimes. Like, hey, that person, that's cool. Yeah. But we like to hear from you. We will often respond, mostly me. and if you want to go onto Facebook, because let's be honest, you're there anyway. Sneaky Dragon is our Facebook page.
Let's be honest, you are procrastinating work in front of the computer.
Also, it's super fun. Sneaky _Dragon on Twitter, and SneakyD at SneakyDragon.com is our email. That is SneakyD at SneakyDragon.com.
That's
repeat
us.
It twice, people remember it. Say it three times, SneakyD at SneakyDragon.com. Now you've forgotten it.
Yes.
And now,
what is it?
Is this your card?
Oh, it was.
Three of Diamonds.
Yes, you got it.
Queen of Pants.
Yes, congratulations.
There we are.
Queen of Pants.
I don't even know what that means. It's after midnight.
I thought it was a tarot card.
We have been in a very hot room for a very long period of time. If you want to hear us talk more, why? Totally Tintin is our new podcast where we go through every edition of Tintin. And Dave
not
is
edition,
deadly but serious. See how deadly serious? He corrected me on edition. Volume, would that be correct?
Every book.
It's volumes, though. There's different volumes
book
of Tintin.
Let's just say book.
What?
Let's just say every book. We go through every book.
Yeah, but books are collections.
No?
Yeah, they're collections.
No, books aren't collections.
No, but these books are collections.
What?
Tintin books are collections of comic strips. They're comic strip collections. You told me that. They're comic strip. Look, this book I've got in front of me.
Okay.
Is it a collection of comic strips?
Yeah, okay.
Thank you very much.
You're right.
See how serious Dave takes it?
But it's... These are a little different. They're not. It's different than newspaper comics. They're not collections of comic strips like a newspaper comic strip.
Some of them are,
but they were done totally differently than newspaper comics.
Like, well,
if you read a Dick Tracy, or whatever, some sort of adventure, Steve Canyon, or Terry the Pirates, or whatever, then you'll see the torment of reading daily strips. Hergé always planned them as books. That's why when he was publishing even as the dailies, he was cutting them out and placing them into a notebook as in the form that they would be published.
Right.
So he could see how it would look on the page. That was what was important to him.
Yep.
Because you can have 4 or 5 days of absolutely nothing really happening in the strip. There's no real cliffhangers. There's no real
plots not moving things, forward.
Yeah, plots not moving forward. It's just some sort of silly gag for 3 days. Just because it worked in the book that way to have the pacing slow down a little
bit. Those of you that have not listened to Totally Tintin, you just met Totally Tintin Dave. You see how his personality changed?
You made me have to defend
There
that.
We go. You actually, no. What you did. Oh, no, he's having another jelly baby. Oh, my gosh. Oh, the jelly babies make him mean. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's Dave's other persona. Thank you so much for listening. I've been Ian Boothby in character.
I've been David Derrick.
With his mouth full of goo.
This stuff is something else.
And congratulations to Eve on her graduations. Cheers, Eve.
Congratulations, Eve.
Cheers. Chuff, 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 chuff.